whole little New Orleans music for Carrie as he celebrates his birthday today in New Orleans. Which I saw he posted on social media that this might have to become a tradition. So I guess I need to get ready to work all by myself and midsummer in future years. We'll see. In the meantime, though, I have got a little company in the studio this afternoon. Great to see our friend Sean Latch from the Versant Power Astronomy Center, who joins us here in studio. Thanks for breaking up the loneliness, Sean.
Oh, sure. Well, happy to do so.
Good to have you here with us as we kick off the month of July. And you were telling me your holiday weekend starts a little later because you got things going tonight with a brand new show.
Yeah. Tonight we start, of course, with Explore at 7 o'clock. And that is a program that takes a look at what it takes to go to Mars and beyond. So we'll be taking a look back in time, looking at how Kepler's laws were discovered and how those make it possible to go into space, into orbit, and then eventually go on to Mars. And of course, there's a big push for to send humans to Mars right now, and you know, with a return to the moon, and then hopefully going on to Mars as a place to, you know, potentially colonize. We'll have to wait and see.
Absolutely. What's the duration of a possible trip to Mars?
Well, go and return about 3 years round trip. So you're looking at around 7 to 8 months one way to get there, a year and a half on the surface until Earth and Mars line up again before you can launch back another 7 to 8 months back. So, yeah, close to a 3-year mission round trip.
Wow. The Sunday show starting, does it start this weekend?
Yes.
All right.
Yep.
Just in time for my birthday, Sunday at 2, 3-2-1 liftoff.
Yeah, that's a show that takes a look at rocketry from a kid's perspective. So you join Elon the hamster, and he finds a sort of a robot that fell out of the sky, and he's got to try and figure out how to get the robot back to his spaceship. So he works on all these different things and figures out how rocketry works a little bit. It's a really fun program for the kids. And, of course, it kind of goes along when you think of the fact that, you know, July, of course, anniversary for all of the different, you know, the Apollo, of course, 11 mission, and that's, you know, sort of ties into that a little bit in that regard. And speaking of that, of course, Sunday also, Dark Side of the Moon returns.
Yes.
As our as our music show at 4, so that'll be fun for folks. You know, if you need some little relaxation this weekend, come join us for that program on Sunday at 3 o'clock.
That's fantastic. And summer matinee shows throughout the summer, Tuesdays and Thursdays at 2 o'clock every week.
Yeah, we started that back about mid-June once the school year finished up, and we've been we're in full swing. Yesterday we had Life of Trees. I think Earth, Moon, and Sun is coming up next week, Tuesday. Basically, we change titles every day, so it gives folks to check out some of the programs they might have missed, and a great way to entertain your kids, either if it's really hot out and you need a cool place to be, or if it's raining out and you need to you know, get out of the rain. We're a great place to do that with. We also have a really cool event coming up in July on the 16th. We're doing a special event for the James Webb Space Telescope. First image release party, and that's going to be from 3 to 5 p.m. We're going to have a NASA panel that will be joining us for that. We'll be showing some cool things in the dome, and we're also partnering with the Challenger Learning Center to do a hands-on activity. And I did get a little bit of word that there's been some discussion on what those first images might be. So right now, we're hearing that at least preliminarily, there'll probably be one deep field image, which is of, like, you know, almost like the Hubble Deep Field, but this will be a much deeper field of galaxies. And then there's discussion that there may be spectra from an exoplanet. And that's something, of course, that might tell us, you know, is there the potential of life on that exoplanet if they're, you know, if they find a biological signature. So could be really interesting stuff. It should be, of course. Yeah. James Webb really expected to revolutionize, you know, what we're seeing up there. And so we're really excited about that. And looking forward to that big announcement and big image release.
Well, that's excellent. And that's coming up, you said, on the 16th.
Yeah, the 16th, which is a Saturday afternoon. So again, we'll be from 3 to 5 p.m. Encourage folks to get tickets early for that, because again, I think that will probably sell out more than likely, just given all the hype around James Webb Space Telescope, which is well-deserved. It's really
Absolutely.
A cool telescope.
Now, did you get a chance to see much? I know we had some clouds here when we had the alignment of five planets. It wasn't ideal viewing conditions.
Yeah, the weather didn't cooperate all that well. I did get to catch all five, at least one of the mornings, but Mercury was really, really low, really tough to catch. But of course, you still have Venus, Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn all for the next month or so. You'll be able to catch all of those. And actually, we're starting to get, you know, Saturn and Jupiter, a little after midnight, you're going to be able to start to see them in our evening sky as well. So a great chance to, you know, take a telescope out or binoculars and get a little closer look.
Now, I'm looking at the list here of July events up in the skies, and July 20th, Pluto at opposition. Is it possible to see that at all with the naked eye?
Not with a naked eye. So basically we have, you know, Mercury through Saturn, and then sometimes Uranus technically is visible to the unaided eye, but you have to be under perfect conditions and really know where it is, because again, it's right at the limit. With Neptune and Pluto, you do need a decent sized telescope, with Pluto minimally usually about 13 inches in diameter, so a pretty decent sized telescope to see Pluto. But opposition, of course, is a time when planets are exactly opposite the sun, meaning they rise at sunset and set at sunrise and are visible all through the entire night.
Also coming up, we've got full moon on the 13th, and then Jupiter enters retrograde motion. What's that mean?
So basically, planets, of course, as they orbit, we see them sort of moving from sort of west to east across our sky versus the background of stars. But when Earth overtakes them from our vantage point, they will appear to stop and then reverse motion. And a long time ago, people weren't quite sure what this did, and that's one of the reasons they thought that, you know, planets were gods that could change, you know, and do their own thing at will, if you will. Well, we know that's really not true. It's just that when we pass by, because Earth is moving faster, they will appear to slow down and then reverse motion, and that's what we call retrograde motion. So it is one of those things. It happens with all of the planets, particularly the outer planets we see retrograde loops with, like with Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, which are kind of cool to see.
Excellent. You were telling me you've got an event down in Southwest Harbor tomorrow?
Yeah, we're doing an observing event with the Claremont Hotel with telescopes, if the weather cooperates. But this is our second sort of reschedule, hoping it will all work out, given, you know, it's always hard to predict weather, though they say it's supposed to be clearing tomorrow night. Mm. So we'll keep our fingers crossed for that.
Do we know any more about Jessica Meir and what the chances are of her being a part of the initial crew to the moon?
Well, we know that she's been selected for the Artemis mission, and we're just waiting to find out if she's going to be on the first mission, and then whether she'll be the first, you know, woman to step on the moon. So that we're still kind of waiting to hear, but she has been selected for that mission, for the Artemis mission. So if she's not on the first one, hopefully she'll be on at least one of them based on the current, you know, cycle of things.
Here's a question. When I was a kid, I thought I wanted to be an astronaut, but you know, then I realized you had to be pretty good at math. That was going to be tough. I got seasick or dizzy on the swings at the playground, so it probably was not going to be a good idea for me. Mm-hmm. But if a young person has thoughts now that they would like to be an astronaut, how has that changed since the days of the right stuff and in the early 60s. What's the process today to join the space program?
Yeah, I mean, you know, back in those days, you pretty much needed to be a military test pilot. I mean, you know, so nowadays, astronauts come from a variety of fields, basically any field in, you know, math, science, or engineering to some extent. So really, you know, the minimum requirement is a bachelor's degree, but when you meet astronauts, most of them are masters or PhDs. Mm. But the minimum requirement is a bachelor's, and then you apply with NASA. They have an application program every couple of years. They'll, you know, go out and recruit and basically look for astronauts. Lots of people apply. Basically, you know, less than 1 in 100 is selected. So it is really an honor to be an astronaut. It sounds very, you know, glamorous in some ways, and it is in many ways, but I'm not ready to do it either yet. I mean, you know, again, I've, you know, talking to some of the ones, the astronauts I've had a chance to meet, they do talk about the fact that, you know, the motion sickness is pretty dramatic. In fact, I want to say about 80% have pretty severe motion sickness and get sick the first, the first day or two until they get their space legs underneath them. And then, of course, you know, the blood in your body, you do get a little bit taller. So, there's no gravity acting on your spine.
Right.
But the blood also, which normally pools in our legs, distributes evenly through your body. And so if you look at astronauts, you'll notice their faces are puffy. They also say that a lot of time it sort of feels like you have a constant head cold in space because of that redistribution of blood in your body. So it's a little bit different. And, of course, everything you want to do up there and need to do up there takes longer and is a process and things like that. So it's not quite as glamorous as, you know, Star Wars or Star Trek right now.
Well, and claustrophobia, that would get to me. I mean, I don't like sitting in a middle seat on a plane. I can't imagine.
Yeah, and most of the time, I mean, you're in a smaller space for a longer period of time. I mean, the space station is relatively roomy. They do say that sleep is one of the most comfortable things because you basically just strap yourself into a sleeping bag on a wall or on the ceiling, and it's supposed to be really comfortable because you don't have any pressure points on you. Yeah. So you really, you know, that's one of the things they say is really nice. But there are some other things that, you know, can be a little bit challenging. So yeah,
absolutely.
I think I'll wait a while before worrying about that.
Happy to watch from here on the ground. But
yes, me too.
We're excited for everything that's coming up here in the month of July. Sean, as always, thanks for visiting with us this afternoon. Have a great holiday weekend, and we'll check in late July or early August.
That sounds great.
Awesome. Sean Latch from the Versant Power Astronomy Center and the Jordan Planetarium at the University of Maine.